Good evening. Normally, you would save the most practical of lessons in a gospel meeting for the last night or the last lesson. That's not what we're going to do tonight. We're going to go ahead and do our most practical lesson tonight because tomorrow we're going to be talking about Christ and how he is supposed to be the center of everything that we are. And so I want to save that. I'm one of those people, I like to put the most important things at the end. So that's why we're going to go ahead and talk tonight about faith in a sort of practicality here. And so there are four areas of life that I want us to focus on that can hit different ages here. We're going to talk about school, work, church, yes, showing faith at church. There's a way to do that. And then most importantly, again, I like to put the most important things at the end. Most importantly, at home, where this is where we have probably some of the most trouble. I would tell you right now, get your fingers ready. There are quite a few passages that I would like us all to turn to and look at. So get your fingers ready. So we're going to start here with some of the younger people in the audience. We're going to talk about faith when we are at school. And so here what we're going to do is we're going to talk about how we're going to show our faith and build up our faith in these locations, in these situations in our life. So, first, we must show respect for authority. Turn over to Romans chapter 13. Romans chapter 13. Mostly what we're going to read here is about government authority, but the point is still the same. Romans chapter 13, verses 1 through 5. Every person is to be in subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing. It is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. Therefore, it is necessary to be in subjection, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. So, yeah, we're talking about government here, but the point is ultimately the same. When we think about those who are in authority over us, no matter where we are, we have to remember that, one, there is someone much more important looking out for us. But two, we have to understand how our relationship is to be with them. It says that rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior. So I used to be a teacher. I taught 6th and 7th grade English. Oh, 6th and 7th grade English. That was tough. But this concept here of having respect for authority, especially in middle school time, it's a very difficult concept to fully wrap heads around. But what is most important is to understand that if you simply do what you're supposed to, suddenly life is better for you. It's a crazy thought that if I just do what I'm being asked, that everything will actually end up going well for me. There were a few students, my wife taught at the same school as I did when we were both living in Florida. And we had kids that we called the crash and burners. And the crash and burners were the ones who most children, the average child, when they get in trouble for something, our primary means of discipline at the school was called demerits, and they were basically notes home, and then the more demerits, the more things happened. But most children, when you said, okay, I have to give you a demerit for XYZ, they were perfect after that. They didn't want to get in any more trouble. They didn't want more notes going home to mom. They didn't want, or dad, they didn't want anything worse to happen, like suspension. But the Crash and Burners did the opposite. The Crash and Burners said, well, I've already gotten in trouble once today. Let's see how far I can go. And we had one of our Crash and Burners was expelled in the course of about 10 minutes. And it started, funny enough, with my wife. And she gave him a demerit. He wasn't doing what he was supposed to. And then in being upset with her, got himself in even more trouble. And then they had to go get the counselor to come in. And she's trying to deal with him, and things are going even worse. And he starts shouting profanity. This kid is in sixth grade, by the way. Shouting profanity. And then, okay, it's time. We need to go home. Okay? And this was right at the end of the day, if he had just kept his mouth shut until he got in the car. And then he gets in the car and proceeds to make rude gestures to the students as his parents are driving off. And that's it. And so in about 10 minutes, the kid went from having the lowest form of punishment to being expelled. All he had to do was say, I'm sorry, and go home. That's all he had to do. And so when we think about how we have to go about our lives, we don't have to be afraid of those who are ruling in authority over us, because all we have to do is do what's right, what is considered good behavior. And you may not agree that it's good behavior, but the point is, you are not the one in authority. They are. And so if we're simply doing what we're asked of us, then life will go well for you. Even if you may, at the time, not like it. Because I can tell you that everybody older than you probably wishes that they could just be in school all the time instead of working. Secondly, you can build up your faith and show others the faith that you have by simply doing your best. There are two places I want us to go to. The first is over in Ecclesiastes chapter 9. We know this well, even if you may not necessarily know that it comes from Ecclesiastes. But we're going to turn there so we can see the context here. Ecclesiastes 9, the point here is in verse 10. He says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For there is no activity or planning or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol where you are going, Sheol being the place of the dead. I again saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, the battle not to the warriors. Neither is bread to the wise, nor wealth to the discerning, nor favor to men of ability, for time and chance overtake them all. Moreover, man does not know his time, like fish caught in a treacherous net, and birds trapped in a snare. So the sons of men are ensnared at an evil time when it suddenly falls on them. And here, the point that he's trying to make is the good things don't come to those who are naturally good at what they do, the race not to the swift, the battle not to the warriors. Simply being wise doesn't give you anything. But his reaction to that is, so then whatever your hand finds to do, do it with everything. We may not get the reward we're expecting, but it's best to simply do everything your hand finds to do to the best of your ability. And if you're not going to do it to the best of your ability, don't even start. Don't waste your time getting into the middle of it and going, well, I guess I can't really do this. No, finish it and finish it strong. Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2. We all know verse 14. We're going to move on to verses 15 and 16 as well. Philippians 2:14. Do all things without grumbling or disputing, so that you will prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent, children of God above reproach in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I will have reason to glory because I did not run in vain nor toil in vain. And yes, when he says, among whom you appear as lights in the world, that counts for you younger people. I say you younger people, I'm not really that much older than you. I feel it, but I'm not. You can be lights to those who are around you, because let me tell you, even at your age, man, there's a lot of darkness. There's a lot of darkness out there already. And it's kind of scary. But you need to be a light in the world. And when you go through your life without constantly finding something wrong with your life, that's going to make an impression on people. I was dropping off a student on Friday, and she and her little brother were getting off. I drive school buses, for those of you who don't know. And as she was getting off, my bus doesn't have any air conditioning. And she turned to me and said, "How do you survive?" And I said, "I simply do my best." And she said, "But you don't have anything to eat or drink." I said, "I know. Let me tell you, life's a lot harder than this." And her eyes got really wide. "Okay, goodbye." And she got off the bus and went on her way. Sometimes that's all it really takes, is to simply not say anything. Not be complaining. "Oh, it's just so hot. Thank you. Everybody knows that." You don't have to tell everyone. And sometimes having all the windows down doesn't help. Sometimes it's just hot. Sometimes things are just difficult. Merely stating the facts of the matter don't often help you. So, plod through. That's going to show more than what everyone else is doing, which is complaining and basically telling everybody what everybody already knows. So, do all things without grumbling or complaining. It's not just be quiet, but it's so that people will notice that you are different. That your difference actually means something. It's not just you're quiet and don't like to complain, but that there is something much deeper inside of you. That you are a child of God. And then, lastly here, showing your faith at school, show restraint. And this can go a lot of different ways. Sometimes showing restraint is not slapping the guy next to you upside the head. Sometimes restraint is taking discipline from your teacher when maybe you haven't actually done anything. Sometimes showing restraint is, like we've already said, not complaining. Sometimes showing restraint is doing your homework. All of these things go into this concept of restraint and self-control. Turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Let's start in verse 24. "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize?" That seems like a joke today anymore. "Run in such a way that you may win. Everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Therefore I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air, but I discipline my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified." And here he makes this connection to athletics. But the point is still the same. He says, look, there are these people who put themselves into immense discipline. Michael Phelps, I was a swim coach for a while. I know, it's hard to tell. But I started doing research on these Olympic swimmers while I was doing this job. And I looked at Michael Phelps' training regimen and his diet. And I was really interested to see kind of how the machine worked. Michael Phelps had to eat, at the peak of his performance, had to eat over 14,000 calories a day. And that's all he really cared about, was getting calories because of how much he was burning. And for the most part, he could eat a lot of the things he wanted, but he still had to be really careful because it wasn't just caloric intake. He had to make sure that he was getting the right nutrients for certain muscle groups and for his central nervous system. And when you look at everything that it took for his training regimen, because then he swam for about 10 to 12 hours a day, constantly, taking very few breaks, so that he could go and perform in front of the world and ultimately not get paid. That's the kind of discipline he put himself in, simply to swim. And then we don't want to sit there and show the same kind of restraint when it has something to say about who we are as Christians. And he says, they're doing it for a perishable wreath. In other words, they're doing it for a gold circle on a ribbon. So isn't there something more important that we're supposed to be looking toward and looking for? But no, it's just too worth it to complain, to not do the things that you're expected to do, to not behave, to slap the person next to you because they won't be quiet. All of that suddenly is no longer worth it. Instead of simply showing some restraint. I misspoke. I said that was the last point. I have one more. And this one is probably the most difficult for, especially at the high school level, is sticking up for yourself, especially when it comes to Christ. Turn over to 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. We're going to start in verse 12. 1 Peter 3, verse 12. The eyes of Yahweh are toward the righteous, and his ears attend to their prayer, but the face of Yahweh is against those who do evil. Who is there to harm you if you prove zealous for what is good? But even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you are blessed. And do not fear their intimidation, and do not be troubled. It's from Isaiah chapter 8. But sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you. Yet, with gentleness and reverence. Goes back to our point about restraint. Gentleness and reverence. In high school, when I got to freshman year, it was a new state. I didn't know anybody. We had just moved from Atlanta. My father's a preacher, so we've moved around quite a bit. We were just coming from Atlanta. I was starting high school. Hadn't grown up with anybody, so I had no idea who anybody is. And the way that Atlanta schools work put me 1 year ahead of a lot of the other kids that were my age. So I went in a lot of sophomore level classes because I'd simply taken the class the year before. And so I'm sitting here not only with people not my age, but also intimidated because I had no idea really where I was. And it's biology. It was our science class. And the teacher, we got only about a month into school and we were already getting to evolution. And he said, all right, is there anybody here who believes in creation? Which I was surprised. I was like, okay. So I raised my hand and I stood up because he asked us to stand up. And I knew the girl sitting next to me, because we've been sitting next to each other for a month, I knew she was Catholic. I thought, maybe she'll stand up with me. No. Maybe somebody else will stand up with me. No. Nobody stands with me. So then, for the rest of the year, I'm constantly asked by my teacher, okay, so what does God say about this? And that's what I got inundated with the entire year. Thankfully, I did know who the principal was. My mother, who can never meet a stranger, got to know the principal. And I went to her one day and I said, is there any way you can just make him stop? Because it's just, it's really annoying. And I just want to learn. It's all I want to do. And she said, don't worry, it's not going to happen anymore. I said, that sounds great. And I never had to deal with it again. But I had to deal with that for months. Of this teacher, okay, so what do you have to say, you weirdo? Sometimes we just have to stand there, and oftentimes we have to stand there alone. It's just a fact of life. And we learn that fact later or earlier, depending on your situation. But you're always going to learn it. The fact of the matter is, you can't let that beat you down, is the point. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with standing up for yourself. There is nothing wrong with that. Especially because we're actually called to it. Always being ready to make a defense. Funny enough, that term there is to apologize. But apology is not to say I'm sorry. The apology is to say I'm going to tell you exactly why I stand for God. And people are not going to like you. People are not going to like you. And sometimes, it doesn't matter. Sometimes that's the least of your worries. Because there will come a time in which we can be here and surrounded by people who will stand up with us. But if you are ever standing by yourself, you're not actually standing alone. So even though I'm going to move on to faith at work, those of you who are younger, there are still lessons here for you to learn, so keep listening. Those of you who especially work at businesses, places that have offices, hopefully this will have some meaning to you. Even if you work for yourself, you're self-employed, I think we can get some lessons out of here as well. Number one. You need to show restraint too. Keep your frustration under control. Because nothing hurts your credibility more than a loss of temper. That hurts credibility faster than anything else. Even when people recognize you're under a high-stress situation, there are plenty of sociological studies that show that. Even granting that they're under high stress situations, loss of temper and control hurts your credibility. And credibility is the last thing that we need to be losing when it comes to who we're supposed to be, which, as we were saying yesterday, are evangelists. We're all supposed to be out there preaching the word. 2 Peter chapter 1. 2 Peter 1, starting in verse 4. For by these he has granted us his precious and magnificent promises, so that by them you may become partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world by lust. Now for this very reason also, apply all diligence in your faith, supply moral excellence, and in your moral excellence, knowledge. And in your knowledge, self-control. And in your self-control, perseverance. And your perseverance, godliness. And in your godliness, brotherly kindness. And in your brotherly kindness, love. For if these qualities are yours and increasing, it's an important word there, they render you neither useless nor unfruitful in the true knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. Now, where in this context does it say that this is only happening when we are together as Christians, when we are talking to other Christians, when we are only in our home or in our church? That's never listed here. That's not in the context. The context is you simply being the person you need to be. And so right there, right in the middle, is self-control. We must always show self-control. And if that's particularly hard for you, guess what? You got to work harder. When we were getting into college, she wasn't my wife or even my girlfriend at the time, but we were freshmen together. We knew each other for about 3 years before we started dating, and we were freshman year in music. We were in the music program together, and starting out, we had about 30 students who all came in as freshmen in the music program. And by about the end of the first semester, we were down to about 10. And a lot of the people, I mean, I had to study. I had to work. But people like my wife, she studied more out of habit, but not really because she needed to. She would really study to help us. She would study with us. And one day, one of our fellow classmates just said, "Jill, I don't get it. I mean, don't you have to actually work at this?" She said, "Well, I guess it comes to me naturally. I'm sorry." And one of the other, and this person just was expressing frustration, and another classmate said, "Look, just work. Just work harder, and you'll get it. Just like Jill does. You'll get it." And that was one that always kind of stuck with me, was, okay, if you need to work a little harder, then guess what? You got to work a little harder. Sometimes that's the way life is. Sometimes you don't just get to ace the test by sleeping late. Sometimes we have to actually work. And so if that means we have to work a little bit harder at getting self-control, that's exactly what we need to be doing. And then over in Romans chapter 12, I told you we'd be turning to a lot of passages. If you didn't get your fingers ready, I warned you. Romans 12, verse 18. "If possible, as so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. And never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God, for it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay,' says the Lord. But if your enemy is hungry, feed him. And if he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." Those two things must go together. And when you're ready to lose control, because how does it seem that those who are the most incompetent manage to keep their jobs the longest? Sometimes we have to deal with that. What's more important is that you be at peace with them. If you're at peace with them, it's easier for you to have a relationship with them. And if it's easier for you to have a relationship with them, it's going to be easier for you to then preach to them. It's going to be easier for you to bring the message to them because they're much more open to you. When it comes not just to your coworkers, but to your bosses, someone always works for someone else. And if they're busting your butt about something, it's probably because someone is busting their butt about something. And you just want to stick it to your boss. You just want to stick it to the man that's higher than you. But that's almost never the way to go. As frustrating as they might be, we must always remember that someone works for someone else. 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 16. "Act as free men, and do not use your freedom as a covering for evil, but use it as bondslaves of God. Honor all people. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. Honor the king. Servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also to those who are unreasonable. For this finds favor if, for the sake of conscience toward God, a person bears up under sorrows when suffering unjustly. As the saying goes, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger." And if you just have to sit there and endure that treatment, it will make you all the better for it. But again, losing your control is the best way to lose your influence. And this one seems to be the strangest one. You might sit there and go, "Huh." But I think we sometimes forget this lesson. Sometimes we have to say no. Sometimes we have to say no, especially if it's going to get in the way of two things. One, if it's going to get in the way of family. And more importantly, if it's going to get in the way of God. And this happens across all occupations. My father has worked with plenty of training preachers. And there was one in particular who just could not bring himself to say no. And I love this man to death. He could never say no. And his saying yes took him all over around the little area where he was working with us, which was in Northern Virginia. He's driving up to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is hours, right? And then he's driving south to Richmond, which is 2 hours. And eventually to the point that he kept getting sick, but he couldn't bring himself to say no. So he's preaching while he's sick and while things are coming out that nobody wants to see. And he could not bring himself to say no. And my dad finally sat him down and said, "Stephen, you have to say no. Because guess what? They're not going to think less of you if you say no. And if they do, then it doesn't matter." And too often, what I see here about people not being willing to say no is, "But it might hurt my advancement." And I understand that we have to make ends meet. I understand that we have to do things for our family. But too often it gets in between us and God. And that's the last place we need to be, is away from Him. And sometimes men get, or women get into these situations where they have absolutely no time for God. And as we learned in the book of Nehemiah yesterday, there's always time for God. So don't tell me that you don't. If you sit there and find yourself saying, "I don't really have time for God," you need to take a long, hard look at what you're doing and why you're doing it. Turn over to Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. We know exactly what I'm going to read, but sometimes hearing it out loud helps. Matthew chapter 6. "Do not worry then, saying, 'What will we eat, or what will we drink, or what will we wear for clothing?' For the Gentiles eagerly seek all these things. For your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things." Again, it's sort of like what we said about complaining. God knows. It's okay. "But seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. So do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will care for itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own." First and foremost, we are seeking after God. And it may not seem like He's got an answer. And maybe that's exactly what God wants you to think. Because God is simply testing you to trust Him. And sometimes that is incredibly difficult to do. Incredibly difficult to do. The preacher who replaced me at the church I just came from before coming to Graham had 4 children just before he got there, before he came and preached for the first time. His wife had just given birth 8 days prior to that. And he didn't have a job. Neither one of them did. And he didn't know what they were going to do. And the church that his father preached for was trying their best to help him out, but they were small, much smaller than this congregation. And so paying 2 preachers was not exactly in their ability. But they tried to help him out. And they said, "We're about to have this baby. We don't know what to do." And so they kept praying and praying, and it seemed like God wasn't answering their prayers. And finally, the church contacted him and said, "Hey, we're looking for someone else." It will seem like God has absolutely no answer for you and that God kind of forgot about you. But that's never the case. Never, ever, ever the case. Faith at church. There's a lot here that I wanted to talk about, so please bear with me. But this is one of the more difficult sections of our life because we just kind of think, well, we're just here, and we kind of shut our brains off in terms of who we should be as Christians. Kind of along the same lines as when you were dating and then you got married and you stopped caring as much. Kind of the same thing, right? So here are some lessons that we need to learn about building up our faith when we're here at church. Okay, and these are just some basic lessons, but I think they will actually help us build our faith. First, unity. Unity is not unanimity. And sometimes in thinking that it's supposed to be unanimity instead of just unity, that will tear us down. Because we think, well, why are we not seeing eye to eye on this? But that is not the point of the unity that God has asked of us. Turn over to Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4. Starting in verse 11, he gave some as apostles, some as prophets, some as evangelists, some as pastors and teachers for the equipping of the saints for the work of service to the building up of the body of Christ until we attain to the unity of the faith and to the knowledge of the Son of God to a mature man, to the measure of the stature which belongs to the fullness of Christ. As a result, we are no longer to be children tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, by craftiness in deceitful scheming. But speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into him who is the head, even Christ, from whom the whole body, being fitted and held together by what every joint supplies, according to the proper working of each individual part, causes the growth of the body for the building up of itself in love. Notice here how he says this in two different ways. First, he says it in verse 11. And then he says it again in verse 16 in different ways. We all have different roles to play. And because we have different roles to play, we may not see things eye to eye. We may see problems that the other person isn't seeing. And that's okay. The point is, we have to be coming to the unity of the faith, of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a mature man. That's the point. To maturity, to spiritual maturity, is the ultimate point. And if that's what we are striving for, then we can build up not only our faith, but the faith of those around us. Is remembering that it may not be unanimity, but unity is still important. Being one in Christ is what is important. As I've been saying at the end of my lessons, we are all imperfect. Now, I will give a pet peeve of mine in particular. When preachers, those giving lessons, say we're all sinners, I hope not. I hope we are not all sinners. But what we can all agree on is that we have all been sinners at one time. And that those imperfections are still there. But we have achieved a salvation that we are supposed to be bold in, that we are supposed to be marching forward and telling others about. And a sinner is someone who is not one with God. A sinner is someone who is constantly living the sin in their life. So again, I hope we're not all sinners. But we are all imperfect and needing of the grace of God. And because of that, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, as Paul says in Romans chapter 3 in verse 23. But he goes on, we always stop there. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And we just kind of lay that out there. There is more to that sentence. Being justified as a gift by his grace. That's what we've all been to. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, but now we're justified. However, because we are all imperfect, we must remember that we ought to have compassion for one another. And because we're trying to have compassion for one another, sometimes there are other sacrifices to be made than just the ones we've made to God. Sometimes we have to make sacrifices to other people. And sometimes we have to let our freedom go for someone else's conscience. Paul talks about this a lot in 1 Corinthians chapter 8. 1 Corinthians chapter 8, I'm just going to read the last three verses of that section there, 11 through 13. For through your knowledge, he who is weak is ruined, the brother for whose sake Christ died. And so by sinning against the brethren and wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food causes my brother to stumble, I will never eat meat again, so I will not cause my brother to stumble. And something else that Paul never says in any section of these passages where he talks about the weak brethren is he never once says, be ashamed of your conscience. Sometimes we have to stick up for ourselves and say, I'm sorry, but that hurts my conscience to do that. And we have to say, I understand that, and I'm sorry, and we'll work around that. And when we start doing those things, when we start learning more about each other, and we become a family, shocking word, I know, family, then what we have to understand is we will build up our faith in the process. To the older of the church, I say, the young have good ideas. 1 Timothy 4:12. Let no one despise your youth. Those who are young have good ideas. And to simply blow them off, one is going to kill their faith and their spirit, their energy for God. And I'll give you an object lesson of that here in just a second. But to the young, I say, the old people have probably tried it before. Your ideas are good. They've probably been done before. And so sometimes if someone says, I don't know if that's such a good idea, there's probably a reason. Let me tell you, they don't just want to put you down. It's probably because they've tried it and it didn't work. And sadly, one of the groomsmen of my wedding has lost his way for something just like this. He and his wife went to the elders of their congregation, said, this is something that we want to try. And the elders said, we've tried that. It's not going to be of any use to you. And you should just give up now is actually what they were told. And sadly then, the onus falls on him, instead of them doing what they should have done, which was maybe come up with another idea of what they could do, it had to do with an evangelistic opportunity, they went and searched for a church that would help them in what they wanted to do. Sometimes we have to listen to one another. Don't squash the youth, but don't stop paying attention to the older people either. There's a reason that there are old and young as Christians and how we're both supposed to be in unity. And so when you look, and he says, nothing new under the sun in Ecclesiastes 1:9. There's nothing new under the sun. Sometimes we have to use that as our guide. In our own court systems, we use something called precedence. When a decision has already been made, we try to stick to that decision. However, sometimes we can go against the grain for a reason. And sometimes letting the youth try their ideas, maybe seeing them fail, maybe seeing them succeed is going to do a lot more good for them. And lastly, most importantly, just a few lessons here. Faith when we're at home. It's so easy to lose this part because there are so few people to be held accountable to. And you see all the people that are sitting around you, this is a lot of people to be held accountable to. When you're at home, that number is drastically different. In my and my wife's home, there's just two of us. So there's not as much accountability when we are at home. So, Lesson number one, building your faith at home. Studying will save your life in more ways than one. Studying, especially the scriptures, is going to be a lifesaver. And my family has dealt with this for a long time. Both my mother and my father. My father being a preacher, my mother being a Bible class teacher. I won't tell you how long. We'll say it's more than 20 years that she's been teaching Bible classes. I won't betray her age. But she's been doing this for a long time. And she always, in every class she's ever had, has always had at least one child who never has their Bible lesson done. And usually when she goes to the parents and asks why that is, she usually gets the answer of, well, we're expecting them to do it and to take responsibility. Okay, that's a point, but they're not actually checking. They're not actually making it a priority. So now the child isn't learning anything at home. And if we sit here and talk about how little we actually get out of only being here two or three times a week, imagine that that's the only spiritual instruction ever that they're getting, is when they're here two or three times a week. And we wonder why the retention of young people 25 and under is so poor in this country for churches, when they're only learning two or three times a day. And guess what? Because you're not holding them accountable, you're probably not holding yourself accountable either. And you're not doing the Bible study you ought to be doing either. Studying is going to save your life. Because as we already looked at before, such as Peter saying, being ready to give a defense, and you've never studied, you aren't ready. You are not ready at all. And Satan is going to eat you for breakfast. Romans chapter 10. Romans chapter 10. Starting in verse 8. But what does it say? The word is near you, in your mouth and in your heart. That is the word of faith which we are preaching. That if you confess with your mouth Jesus as Lord and believe in your heart that God has raised him from the dead, you'll be saved. For with the heart a person believes, resulting in righteousness. And with the mouth he confesses, resulting in salvation. How can you do that if you don't actually know what the word is? How can the word be in your mouth and in your heart if you never look at it? That was one thing the Pharisees really understood, was, you know what? If I actually take God's word literally and bind them on my hands and on my head and around my neck, that it will give me a remembrance. There was always something there for them to remember what the word was. Sometimes we are lacking in that department. And turn over to 1 Corinthians 15. 1 Corinthians 15. Starting verse 1, now I make known to you, brethren, the gospel which I preached to you, which also you received, in which also you stand, by which also you are saved, if you hold fast the word which I preached to you, unless you believed in vain. How are they supposed to do that if they weren't constantly wrapped up in it, listening to what Paul had to say, going home and looking at what they had access to at home? And it's so important, by which also you're saved. You have to know that. But if you're not taking the time to read it, then you don't get it. Unless you believed in vain. If you never open it, that's all that's left for you, is believing in vain. Because you have no idea what you're actually believing. Secondly, those at home need to be a family. There are things that we like to do, that we find enjoyment in doing. I understand that. But too often, we get so caught up in what's going on in our life that, again, we find ourselves without time. I was talking to a gentleman who works at the theater where my wife and I spend a lot of our time doing work there. And one day we asked him, we said, hey, your family should come and have dinner with us. And I said, so Kim, let's pick a time. He said, okay, well, let's see. And he started going through his schedule. He said, well, we can't do this month. We can't really do next month. And we can't really do the month after that. And he's going through and telling me all the things that they have left to do. That each individual family member had tons of things to do. And they're not Christians. And I've seen Christians with that level of a calendar, of a schedule, that everything is jam-packed. What you need to understand is that you need time to be a family. If you're not taking time to be a family, then when we talk about things like family and how important it is to be a family as a group of Christians, that has absolutely no connection. It means nothing. Okay, so family means we might sit down for 5 minutes and literally throw one bite in our mouths and then we're off to the next thing. And so then only seeing each other two or three times a week doesn't seem that strange as a family. You need to take time to be a family. You look at Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3. Wives, be subject to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be embittered against them. Children, be obedient to your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Fathers, do not exasperate your children so that they will not lose heart. God is sitting here and taking time after he's just talked about how important it is to put on the new self and being raised to walk in newness of life. And then he says, this is how you need to be a family. It's one of the first things that Paul brings up, is how to be a family. Are you telling me that it's not important? When it's one of the first things to focus on after we've become new creations. It's focusing on how we should be a family. And a similar thing is said in 1 Timothy 3, 4 through 5. We won't go there, but perhaps look at it at your own time when you go home and study. And on the same lines as be a family, this is the last lesson I'm going to leave you with tonight. When you think about what all you have to do, you have to put God first. You have to schedule time for God. Then feel free to fill your schedule with whatever you want. But schedule God first. I have yet to hear someone say, can I do that? I've got my time with God. I can't do that. I've never heard anyone say that. And I haven't even given myself a chance to say it. Maybe we'll start making that a priority. That maybe we can tell someone one day, I'm sorry, my time with God is preventing me from doing that. Matthew chapter 22. This is the last passage we're going to read tonight. I know I've gone a little long. You all have been extremely patient with me, and I appreciate that. Matthew 22. Starting in verse 36. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? He said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and prophets. And then I have up here Exodus 20, verse 1 through 17. That's the Ten Commandments. There's a reason why in both Jesus in under the new covenant and the Ten Commandments of the old covenant say the same thing. You shall love the Lord your God, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. The first four commandments of the Ten Commandments are all about loving God. And then the last six are all about loving your neighbor as yourself. Treating other people the way they ought to be treated. And then Jesus says, and by the way, that's still the most important. If you're not leaving time for God, if you're not making time for God, then you've lost that. That is not a concept to you anymore. Let's be honest with each other. It is not a priority anymore. And if he's not a priority, then when he says, thou shalt have no other gods before me, that's not ringing any red flags anymore. And that is a dangerous place to be. So hopefully tonight, what we have seen are some ways that we can build up our faith and the life around us. That no matter what situation we are in life, there are ways to be building up our faith, showing others our faith. And so tomorrow when you come back, we're going to really get into why, right? This was how. This was how. Tomorrow night is why. Because it really all centers around Christ. And we're going to get to why that is tomorrow night. But I hope you've gotten something out of this tonight. Certainly preparing for this gave me a lot as well. And so tonight we're going to have an opportunity as we're singing here that is going to get you a chance to do one of the things we had up there, which was be a family as Christ, being a family unified here. And you can take advantage of this opportunity and ask us to help you. And we should be more than willing to help whoever comes up here needing help. If that help is to become a child of God, oh, we are more than happy to help. If you're already a child of God, we'd be more than happy to help your problem as well. So please take advantage of the opportunity as we stand and as we sing.